This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. Welcome. My name is Jet Li, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and astronauts as they solve problems in their field using curiosity, cooperation, and critical thinking. Right now, please welcome to the show my co-host in exploration, the dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Jed. How are you today?
I am wonderful. Can't wait for another exciting episode of Solve It for Kids.
It's going to be out of this world today.
Oh, I love those out of this world episodes. Always so much fun. So can we spin the wheel, figure out what we're going to solve today?
Spin the wheel. Go right ahead.
How do you test a rocket without blowing it up?
How do you test a rocket without blowing it up? That sounds like a really important problem to solve.
I would think so. Kind of extremely important, especially because you spend all this money to create this rocket and, well, you know, let's not have it blow up.
Yeah.
So we are honored to have on our show today engineer Suzanne Slade, who's going to talk to us about how you do these tests. But Suzanne is also a children's author. Isn't that cool?
That is amazing. I just can't wait. Can I say hi to Suzanne? Welcome her?
Absolutely.
Hey, Suzanne, welcome to Solve It for Kids.
Well, hi, Jen and Jed. I'm so excited to be here on Solve It. I have loved listening to your shows. You guys are awesome, and I can't wait to talk with you today.
Tell us a little bit about how you came to test the rocket. What did you do in your career?
Okay, well, Jennifer, this is a time when I worked at a company called McDonnell Douglas Space Systems out in Huntington Beach, California. And my job there was the test engineer. And so what would happen is McDonnell Douglas was creating, I worked on Delta and Titan rockets, which NASA would purchase to launch satellites that would help us get newscasts from around the world, would help us with our GPS that we use in our car and our phones. So as my job as a test engineer, what I needed to do was to make sure that the rocket was going to be safe when it launches, that it would launch and not blow up, okay? So what you need to do then as an engineer is you need to test the parts separately and then assemble some of them and test them again. So there's a lot of testing that goes on all along the way.
Now, Suzanne, one of the things, we spoke to an engineer that was designing flying cars. And one of the things he said, and his job was, he was a tester. And he was saying his job was to break things. And so they took and they intentionally crashed the flying car, you know, a bunch of different flying cars to see what broke and what stayed together. I'm guessing you can't intentionally crash a rocket.
This is true, right. And I also worked in automotive. Another job I had at another time was working on car brakes. And yes, as an engineer, sometimes you need to test something to its limit until it breaks. So then you know better how it will work in the vehicle you want it to be in. But you're right. In the case of a rocket, where rocket parts, even just the separate parts, are so expensive, you don't want to intentionally break them, but you do want to test them so you know they're safe. So to your question about not blowing up a rocket, one of the big problems we had to solve was when we tested what was called a liquid oxygen tank, or for short, a LOX tank. And this was the tank in a Delta rocket. It was used when the rocket first launched, and there was fuel in it, but it needed a lot of oxygen, you know, how fuel needs oxygen to burn. So this liquid oxygen, if you compress it really tightly, you know, now it's in the air, it becomes a liquid. So this big, huge metal LOX tank or liquid oxygen tank, we needed to test it to make sure it would work. It wouldn't explode when it was on the rocket launching. So to do that, we would pressurize the liquid oxygen tank, which means you pump a lot of air in it, kind of like when you blow up a balloon, but right. we pumped more and more air. We would pressurize it to a certain pressure. And then we felt if it could withstand that, a higher pressure than it would be exposed to when it was in the rocket during the launch. So we pressurized it. And so what could happen though, when you've got a huge metal object under great pressure, if it did fail, if it did break apart, it would essentially become a bomb. It would yes. explode and it would injure any of us test engineers or technicians who were testing it. So this was the problem. How do we test it safely, knowing that if it did fail, we all wanted to stay safe? So finally, you know, often engineers, scientists work together as a team. You collaborate, you talk about ideas.
Right, right.
So we collaborated and we decided what we needed to do was test it in a bomb shelter.
Huh?
And that is a structure with very strong walls that is made safe. So if a bomb did go off, it would stay contained in the bomb shelter.
Right.
So we had a bomb shelter built underground, and then we could go down, take this liquid oxygen tank and other large parts, pressurize it. And here is what I think is the interesting part. So what if there was a small leak in it? I mean, that's what we would want to find. How would we see a small leak if we're just pumping air in it? How do you think we would see it?
Colorize it.
That's a thought, but you'd need a very dense color to even see a small amount. So what we did was we used bubble soap, like what you use.
Oh, yeah.
You would put, but the technician would put bubble soap on all the joints and locations where we feared it might leak. And then you pressurize it. And then if you see little bubbles, even teeny tiny little bubbles, you know you have a leak. So something as simple as bubble soap could help save a whole space mission, right?
That's amazing. Now, so you've explained this, but I want to give our listeners some kind of spatial reference here. So how big is this tank that we're talking about? Can you describe?
Roughly 25 feet in diameter.
So if you assume one story is what, 10 feet? Is that what we, for on a house?
So. Mm-hmm.
So this would be like two and a half stories. That's
right. Huge. Right. A very large tank. Yes. And that's
and why. And then how high is it too? Is it just the bottom part of?
It's basically spherical in shape.
Okay.
So basically a round shape. Yes. It's a very large, and that's why it was so dangerous when we pressurize it. Now, if we were pressurizing a small part, say something the size of my hand, that wouldn't be very dangerous if it exploded, right? But the bigger something gets and the more pressure you put in it, the more chance you have for it to explode.
Yeah, so that's like blowing up a house.
Right.
Well, it's a giant house. So when you put it down into the bomb shelter, I assume you guys were outside and above.
Correct. Yes.
Watching it with video or something.
Right. You could do it remotely. That's exactly right. Yes. We also had a smaller bomb shelter inside that had glass walls around it that we could look to if we had other parts. So there were different places we could test various parts.
So I have to ask, did you ever have a rocket blow up?
We did not. We did not have any failures that were explosions. No, I can thankfully say we did not have any of that excitement in the lab, which is a good thing.
So then your rockets were then taken to NASA, and then NASA actually used the rocket that you worked on to send, send
satellites. They would send up satellites. And whenever there would be a launch, everyone at McDonnell Douglas Space Systems, because, you know, thousands of people, it takes tens and hundreds of thousands of people to work on a rocket. It really does. And we would all get together in the big cafeteria. I remember they would show on the big screen the launch, because you have worked on that and you want to see it succeed. And we know that not all launches do succeed. We've had some real tragedies in the past. So it was very satisfying. I think when you work on something, that's, I think, one of the beautiful things about being an engineer is you're often working on an actual product, something you can see and you can touch and you can watch it do what it's supposed to do. And it's really satisfying to see that, to see what you worked on actually work and help people.
Suzanne, you're talking about tens of thousands of people coming together, working as a team. And that sounds neat. Are all those thousands of people, are they all like engineers and scientists, or are there other folks like creatives or custodians and, you know, just all different talents?
Right. There's technicians, the people who actually assemble and weld and do the more of the hands-on testing. The design engineers make the design. They're test engineers. There were support staff in the office who would Xerox things. And you're right, people who clean the buildings. One of the things about working on rockets is you need to work in a clean environment. It's called a clean room. Maybe you've sometimes seen pictures of scientists where they put on like a white jumpsuit and cover their head. And many of the parts on a rocket, you need to work in a clean room because even a bit of dust or other things could make it not work properly. So there are people in charge of keeping these super, super clean rooms clean. So you're right. Lots and lots of people coming together to help create a big rocket.
So we also like to talk a little bit about failures and anything you've learned. So I'm curious, after you coat it with, you know, the liquid bubbles and you have the bubbles blowing out, I don't know that you call that a failure, but how do you fix that then if there's air escaping?
Okay. So then that would fall. This is the interesting part about a big project like this where there's so many people involved. So my job would be we test it. If we find a failure, let's say there's a leak, then we send it back to the design engineering people and they would repair it. And they would know the right way to do that, right? It's a certain type of metal. Maybe it needs a certain type of weld. They would fix it according to their procedures and then they send it back to us again and we would test it again. And that's why making a rocket takes years, because there's so many parts and things that need to be checked and maybe redesigned and fixed. I remember one time there was a part that, it was a big electrical part and it didn't work right. And we had to send it back. And I know they said it was going to cost millions of dollars for them to rework it and to make it, to fix it.
Wow.
Well, it makes sense that you have to test all these things because you know, when man started going into space, they had never done that before. And
right.
So they had to use all those theories and what's going to work up there and what might happen. And I guess it takes a lot of creativity and a lot of knowledge, but also a lot of courage, too, to kind of try these things.
Boy, Jed, you're reminding me of the very first mission of the of the Apollo moon missions. You know how Apollo 11 was the mission that finally landed, right? Neil Armstrong first step on the moon. But before Apollo 11, there was Apollos 1 through 10, right?
Yes.
And so Apollo 1, the very first mission, there were three brave men. And as they were getting this spacecraft ready, they knew this was a brand new thing, right? And one of them, Gus Grissom, he sensed that the equipment wasn't going to be safe. And he even picked a lemon off the lemon tree in his yard and hung a lemon on the rocket one day. You know how a lemon is often the sign for a car that it's bad?
Right.
A car is called a lemon. So as a joke, but he was really kind of serious, he hung a lemon on that. Well, it came time where the Apollo 1 mission was almost ready to launch. Now, they were not targeting the moon yet. They just wanted to launch the rocket, orbit Earth, and make sure that all of that worked properly. So 2 weeks before launch, the three astronauts got into the Apollo 1 spacecraft and were doing testing. And the testing went on very late at night. They had to turn the lights on. They were having trouble communicating with their radio. And all of a sudden, one of the astronauts inside the spacecraft said, "Fire. I smell fire." And within moments, the entire inside of the capsule was engulfed in flames. Mm. And the astronauts did not make it out of that rocket alive. So being an astronaut, you are very, you know, you're taking risks. You know, you may not survive. And the engineering decision that cost them their lives was that inside that capsule was pressurized with pure oxygen. You know how we breathe oxygen, but the air has other gases mixed in as well.
Yes.
But the engineers realized, you know, oxygen weighs a lot less than other gases mixed. And it costs a lot of money. They want to make the rocket as light as possible. So they put pure oxygen inside, which is great. It's very light, but it's also very flammable.
Yes.
So even the smallest spark, and then everything inside was flammable. And so the engineers learned a very
difficult,
high-cost lesson mm-hmm. on that. And so they never, of course, they never pressurized a rocket with oxygen again. And the reason the research on that, I have a book called Countdown, 2,979 Days to the Moon, and it shares those Apollo 1 through 10 missions. So I did a lot of research on that and read a lot of NASA transcripts, and it's very, very interesting how we got to the moon. I got to interview Alan Bean, who was the fourth man on the moon.
Wow.
You know, we've only had 12 people ever in all of history on the moon, only 12, and he was the fourth man on the moon. And I think one of the funniest things, we had this long conversation, and he goes, you know, Suzanne, I have one regret about my trip to the moon. And I'm thinking, what could this be, Alan? I said, first of all, when your rocket launched, this is the mission right after Apollo 11. This is the next one. When Apollo 12 launched, there was a storm going on, and their rocket was hit by lightning twice.
Oh, wow.
As they were launching, and they lost all electrical power. They almost had to abort, but they got the systems back up, and so the mission kept going. So, number one, they survived that. The second big goal of this mission was to see if they could do a pinpoint landing. They could pick where they wanted to land on the moon and actually land there. And they did. They did this. They landed in these group of craters called the Snowman. They landed right in the belly button of the Snowman, so that went great. So I said, Alan, what was your regret about your mission? And he said, I wish I'd smuggled up a football. And then I could have gotten out on the moon, and I could have thrown the longest pass in the universe, you know, because there's no air and 1/6 gravity, you know. I think he got that idea after an astronaut after him, Alan Shepard, snuck up some golf balls in a golf club. And
yep, I saw those. We were at Marshall Space Center a few weeks ago, and we saw the pictures of that. But
yeah, I think Aaron got his idea.
So do you have any tips for maybe any kids who are interested in engineering, what they need to study or things they should try or something, or books they should read?
Well, definitely in school. I think it's always a good sign that you would probably like engineering if your favorite subjects in school are math and science. I think that's a really good sign because what you want to find is the job that fits who you are, right? The right. things that you like to do, the things that come more easily to you. I always loved science and math. And honestly, when I was in school, I had never heard of an engineer. I didn't know one. I'd never heard it was a job. And it wasn't until I was in high school, my mother heard about it. And she said, because she watched me, I would light up. I mean, when I'd get to math class, I was so happy. The day we'd have a math test, I'm just like, yeah, get on. Okay, so that's a sign. Now, other gym class and other stuff, not so much. So you have to go after things that you're naturally good at and you love, because that means that's going to be a job that you're going to really enjoy and do well at.
Suzanne, one of the things we love to do here on Solve It for the Kids is to challenge our audience to make the show totally interactive. So I was wondering, do you have a challenge for our listeners?
I've got a couple things. First of all, NASA Kids Club is an awesome website. So if you do love space and science, there's a great place, and you can have a link for that on your site. And on my website, SuzanneSlade.com, I have a whole page of just space resources with cool things like a rocket tangram or a rocket you can make out of a straw that you can launch. And then specifically about what I used to do was to test rockets, pressurize. I do have a craft that they can do at home if they want, where they can make their own rocket out of a 2-liter soda bottle.
Oh.
They'll duct tape a straw to the top, and they can blow in the straw to pressurize it. And then they'll make some spots that they're going to test. And one of them, they get up, their mom or dad put a hole in one, and then they have to test it and see if they can find the hole, and they can use bubble soap.
Oh, I think that's a great challenge, don't you, Jed?
I do. I love that. And Suzanne has this really neat rocket. You know, it has the what do you call those, fins on them at the bottom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I had this, fun decorating this, too. Yeah.
We're going to take a picture of her in this and put it on the website so you can see what she made.
So I think that, I think the challenge would be for kids to make their own, to make this experiment, to decorate their rocket ship in their own way, take a picture of it, and then post it.
Yeah, I found some stickers at home we had. It used to have foil on it. I took the foil off. I used magic markers. I duct taped fins on. So it was really fun. I made a little cone. And you can, yeah, it was fun to decorate, if nothing else, for a neat thing to have in your room, but also you can use it for testing.
Right. So everyone make one of these and then take a picture of yourself with it, or just the rocket if you don't want to be in the picture, and then tag us on our social media sites. We are Solvit on Instagram and Twitter, and or you can just email it to us at our solvitpodcast.com website.
And tell you what I'll do. So after you get these entries, if you guys want to pick a winner, pick one that you like best, I'll send them a copy of my book called The Daring Dozen. I'll sign it. And The Daring Dozen is about the 12 who walked on the moon. You can read in there. There's Alan Bean, that astronaut I was telling you about who wanted to throw the football. He wrote a page in the book about what it felt like to be on the moon. So you guys pick a winner of the rockets. I'll send them an autographed book of Daring Dozen.
Wow.
That's great.
What
I know. Awesome.
Deal. Excellent.
Thank you. Well, so basically, I guess we're at the end of the show because we could talk about space for forever. But thank you so much, Suzanne, for being on Solve It and teaching us how to test a rocket without blowing it up. I'm sorry. I just love that title. Isn't that cool?
Well, thanks for having me. It was so fun to talk science and rockets with you guys.
Hey, Jennifer, Suzanne was fascinating. That was amazing.
I know. Isn't it so cool? And, you know, I'm just going to keep adding to all of these lists of jobs that I want to do someday, right? With all of our guests, they are doing such cool things.
I know. And they're working on such cool teams. That's one of the things that I love is finding out that being in the STEM fields, it's like being on a great team.
It is. It's all about cooperation. Now, don't forget to go to our website, solveitforkids.com, if you want to learn more about Suzanne. And we actually have a video from there because NASA is currently testing the SLS rocket right now. And there's videos on YouTube that show you what they're doing so that their rocket doesn't blow up. Cool, huh?
That is really, really cool. What a great website. Solveitforkids.com. It's like growing. It's like becoming a universe of information. It's awesome.
It is. And also, look for us soon on Teachers Pay Teachers. We're creating teacher packs for you to use in your classroom.
Awesome. Oh, so check it out, solveitforkids.com. And Jennifer, I can't wait till next week when we have another great episode of
Solve It for Kids.